Homeschool leader, do you feel confused or overwhelmed by the job of running your homeschool group? You're not alone. Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA, is here to help. Carol is an accountant, author, and retired homeschool mom who understands you. Her website has helpful information on co-ops, paying workers, and managing the money in a homeschool group. If you need personalized advice, set up a consultation with Carol. She's happy to discuss your particular situation. Visit homeschoolcpa.com today and get the information you need to successfully run your homeschool group. Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a microbusiness, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Hi, everybody. This is Carol Topp from homeschoolcpa.com. Welcome to this episode of the Homeschool CPA podcast. We are discussing hiring workers in a homeschool organization this afternoon. First of all, I have written two short electronic books which might be helpful to you. One of them is called Paying Workers in a Homeschool Organization, the same as this program. And you may find that helpful. It's a relatively short book, only about 20 pages long, but the benefit of having the book in addition to this workshop is I'm going to refer to some IRS forms, and there are copies of the forms in the book, so you actually get to see physically what I'm talking about. There's also a couple of checklists if you're going to hire employees or independent contractors, and those things you might find very helpful to share with your group. You can get a copy of that ebook from my website, homeschoolcpa.com, under the bookstore link. It's an electronic book, so it gets delivered to you automatically as a PDF file. The other resource you might find helpful is another electronic book I wrote called Question and Answers for Homeschool Leaders. You can also get that at homeschoolcpa.com. And that's a much longer book. It's about 60 pages, but I spend a significant amount of time talking about paying workers, paying volunteers, dealing with volunteers, independent contractors, employees, the whole thing, because I've gotten a lot of questions over the years from homeschool leaders just like you. So it could be that maybe your questions are answered in that book. I cover a lot of other things in that Question and Answer for Homeschool Leaders electronic book. If you go to homeschoolcpa.com and the bookstore link, you can actually read the table of contents in a sample couple pages so you know what that book is all about. Okay, so let's dive in. This is a workshop about paying workers in a homeschool organization, so most of our time is going to be spent talking about you as the homeschool leader and you hiring workers. We may spend a little bit of time on the different end of it where you might be paid by a homeschool organization. And I'm going to start by talking about paying volunteers, because you know in our homeschool organizations, whether you're running a co-op or you're running a support group, music groups, I've gotten all kinds of homeschool organizations I've run across over the years, largely they're dependent upon volunteer labor. And some of these volunteers, you know, ladies, you're probably some of them, you work awfully hard. And sometimes you just want to reward these volunteers. The problem is, as soon as you pay a volunteer cash or a check, as soon as you pay them, they're no longer a volunteer. Then they have received payment for their services, and they are then probably an employee working for your organization, and you run into quite a few headaches. And we're going to talk about some of the headaches from just the tax reporting. So for the most part, I discourage organizations from paying their volunteers any kind of cash because of the tax consequences and the paperwork consequences that it causes. I instead encourage organizations to reward their volunteers or show appreciation to their volunteers in non-cash ways. First of all, verbal appreciation is always, always one of the best because it doesn't cost anything, does it? But just tell your volunteers that you appreciate them a lot. So rewarding your volunteers. There's a couple of other ideas of ways to reward your volunteers instead of giving them cash. And I mentioned, of course, verbal appreciation. But gift certificates to restaurants, offering child care. How about a gift certificate for them to go out for the night and you take the kids? You know, flowers and chocolate are always greatly appreciated. I was thanked for my service on my homeschool co-op. I served for treasurer for 4 years, and they gave me a gift certificate for a spa to go get a massage. That was marvelous. It's something I wouldn't have done myself, but it was marvelous to get that gift certificate. Another great, great way you can reward your volunteers is to give reduced fees or reduced tuition. And the reason that's good is it's almost like cash in their hands, but reduced tuition or reduced fees for your programs or something like that, it's not a tax, it's a non-taxable fringe benefit. So that's a great way to give them a reward. I don't want you to think that you could write them a check for the amount of fees. I mean, you never collect the fees to begin with. And that's just a big difference in terms of the IRS and how they look at the money. So if you are paying anybody on your board, if you're paying anybody who's volunteering for your organization, well, then that's taxable income. And we don't want to go down that route if we don't have to. I'll tell you a story about one woman who was given a gift of cash. What happened was at the end of the year, the folks in her homeschool co-op collected a lot of money. She was shocked to find out that she had been given a gift of about $700, and she was worried about the tax implications of that. And I do write up my reply to her in that book, Question and Answers for Homeschool Leaders. They told her, use this money and go to the homeschool convention in our state and take the money and book yourself a hotel and you have meals and make it all on us. And I wish instead that the homeschool group had paid that themselves instead of giving her the cash, because it kind of made things a little complicated, especially that dollar amount, $700. And what about an honorarium? That's a really good question. An honorarium, in the eyes of the IRS, is just another word for payment for services. An honorarium is usually what you give a speaker if they're brought in and you pay them, and speakers have to report that income. So the fact that you call it an honorarium doesn't change how it looks in the eyes of the IRS. It's still considered income that that person who receives it then has to report. And they either have to report it as an employee, if indeed they're an employee, or chances are they have to report it as income as an independent contractor or as a small business owner. All right? If it's truly a gift, call it a gift, meaning they didn't do anything to earn that gift. You truly just are thanking them and appreciating them. And it should not be expected at all. Renee asks, reimbursements for expenses are not considered paying cash, right? You are correct, Renee. Reimbursements for expenses are not considered earned income. That's really what you said, reimbursements for expenses. Earned income or paying someone for their services is obviously very different from just reimbursing them. So, yeah, a lot of times homeschool leaders spend a lot of their own money, supplies and, you know, cupcakes and refreshments and things like that. So definitely make sure you put in your budget some money. We call it hospitality at our co-op to reimburse these volunteers for their expenses, so at least they're not shelling out their own money. Let me go in and talk about workers now. This is when you're actually going to pay people who work in your co-op, and there's a lot of different people you can end up paying in your co-op. You know, you can pay some teachers that you might hire. Either they're members of your co-op or your homeschool group and you're paying them to teach a class, or we have quite a few outside people that are not members that we pay because we couldn't get a volunteer to teach a class at our co-op. Some homeschool organizations pay their board members. Some pay their leaders because these leaders work so hard. It's like a part-time job for them. Some of them pay people to clean up. We have a woman that comes around, even though our volunteers or our members are all supposed to clean up the church that we meet in. We decided to hire somebody and pay her. I think we pay her about $50 every week to clean up after we've cleaned up. Keeps the church where we meet happy. So you can have either employees or you can have independent contractors. Let's talk about what the difference is. The IRS has three different categories of definition where they define what makes an employee different from an independent contractor. All right. First of all, the first one is behavioral control. The second one is financial control. And the last one is the relationship between the worker and the organization, in our case, a homeschool group. So let's start with behavior control. that means that the IRS looks at who directs and controls the work. An independent contractor works by themselves. No one directs them. No one tells them what to do necessarily in terms of how to do their job, and they need no training when they come into the job. So the best example of an independent contractor would be like a plumber. If you needed to hire a plumber, you expect them to come into the job. You expect them to not need any training from you on how to do the job. In a homeschool situation, how much you direct that worker's work could move them from being an independent contractor to being an employee. If you have to say, teach like this, do like this, use this curriculum, how much you control them could mean that you're treating them more like an employee and less like an independent contractor. Okay, so that's the first one, the behavior, how you direct and control their work. The second criteria that the IRS looks at when trying to distinguish between an employee and independent contractor is the financial control. In other words, independent contractors are paid by the job, whereas employees are paid by the hour. Now, this can get a little funny in homeschool groups because if you're like a lot of them, you might meet once a week or something like that, and you might say to one of your, say your hired Spanish teacher, could you please come in and teach Spanish for an hour? We will pay you so much per hour. So you're paying them per hour, which sounds an awful lot like an employee, doesn't it? Yes, it does. Be careful there. You might want to say, could you please come in, Miss Spanish speaker, teach Spanish to our high school kids, but could you please, and then, but price it by the job, meaning maybe the semester, maybe the 6 weeks that she's going to come in. She should price it by the whole job, not necessarily by the hour. Now, as the teacher, she may mentally say, well, I'm going to be there for so many hours and I want this per hour, and she may mentally do that calculation in her head and then quote you a full price. But you should hire independent contractors for a job, not by the hour. Employees are paid by the hour. Okay. This is assuming, I'm assuming you want to hire people in your co-op as independent contractors because it's easier to deal with the taxes and the paperwork. I should say that is my assumption to begin with. Okay. The other issues having to do with financial control is that independent contractors are paid by the parents directly. Employees are paid by the organization. So let me explain. My homeschool co-op, we had about four teachers and about 20 volunteers, and the four teachers were paid, and I was the treasurer, and I was writing checks to these four teachers. I think we paid them once a month for the classes that they were paid to teach, and everybody else was a volunteer. And then I realized this is not kosher. And we I was working with another homeschool group, and they had a letter from the IRS. And the IRS has said specifically to this homeschool group, if you want this teacher to be an independent contractor, they should be paid directly by the parents, not by the organization. If your organization is paying a worker, it makes them look an awful lot like an employee. That's kind of a one big difference between employees and independent contractors, who is writing the check, who is paying them. So we made a change in our homeschool co-op. And we said, okay, we have these four paid teachers. They were teaching art and Spanish and guitar and something else. And we said to the parents, if you want to take a class from one of these teachers, you pay the teacher directly. And we as the co-op got out of the business of paying teachers altogether. Now we depended more on our volunteers. And if a parent really wanted that art class, they had to pay the teacher specifically to take that art class during our co-op time. Okay. I wrote up a lot of this in that book, Question and Answers for Leaders. You can also maybe find a little bit of that on my blog at homeschoolcpa.com if you've read my blog entries about how we pay our independent contractors very differently now. We don't pay them at all, to be honest. The parents have to pay them directly. Just think about like when you have a piano lesson for your kids. You pay that piano teacher directly, don't you? Yeah, usually. Sometimes if you pay an organization, then that piano teacher is an employee of that organization. Okay. One other issue that distinguishes independent contractors from employees is that independent contractors provide their own equipment and tools. So we hired an art teacher to teach at our homeschool co-op, and she lugs in tons of art supplies every week, and that is as it should be. Now, there are a few things that she uses for my supply cabinet, or she asks parents to go ahead and buy art supplies. But for the most part, independent contractors provide their own equipment and their own tools. That's a distinguishing. Employees use the equipment and the tools the organization have. Okay, we've got some questions. Let me take those for a minute. You're a piano teacher, and the organization always hired you as an independent contractor. Yeah, it's not always clear cut. Maybe they were very clear on every other test, and this was only one way that you looked more like an employee. The IRS doesn't necessarily say one thing is a litmus test to throw you into the employee classification as opposed to independent contractors, but it is one of the things they look at is how you are paid. And the other question is, if someone does work by the hour and pays their own taxes, are they self-employed or independent contractor? That's a little hard for me to answer because there's so much more that goes into that question. If they do their work by the hour, they pay their own taxes, it sounds like they might be self-employed. Self-employed means the same thing as independent contractor. Sorry. Independent contractors are self-employed people. They're not employees. Again, there's no litmus test. This is what's frustrating to work with the IRS. There's no way that they say, check this box, you're an employee. Check that box, you're an independent contractor. They say they look at many, many factors. The last one I want to look at, the IRS says, is the relationship between the worker and the organization. Is there a clear written contract for independent contractors? That would be a very good idea. When you hire somebody, make sure they understand their status with you. Make sure you say, you are an independent contractor. I am not going to withhold any federal income tax on you. I am not going to pay any Social Security tax on you. And by the way, here's an agreement I want us to sign. I have a sample in my Paying Workers in a Homeschool Organization ebook. You can be free to borrow the sample and adjust it as you will. So have that clear written contract so no one is surprised or angry at you come tax time when they did not understand that you were treating them as an independent contractor and they are responsible for their own taxes. Also, this is very important. Independent contractors do not get any benefits. Now, I know a lot of you are thinking, heavens to Betsy, you know, Carol, our homeschool organization can barely afford to pay people, let alone pay them benefits. And I don't mean benefits like health care or dental, but there is one very common benefit that we as homeschool organizations frequently give our workers, whether they're volunteer or employees, and that is sometimes free classes, free activities, or reduced fees. Right? I bet some of you do that. You say, if you come and teach a class, we'll let your kids come for free. Now, if they're a volunteer, that's fine. But as soon as you start paying that person to teach a class and letting their children come free, you've got a problem. All right? If you treat them as an employee, there's no problem because the IRS has determined that free tuition, if I'm going to call it tuition or reduced fees for a class, is a non-taxable fringe benefit. If you know anybody that teaches at a Christian school, and they frequently will tell you that their kids go to the Christian school for free or maybe for 50% tuition discount, something like that. So we can certainly do that in our homeschool groups if they're employees. All right. But if someone comes into your homeschool group and you pay them as an independent contractor and they say, oh, by the way, can my kids come? And can they come for free? Or can I put them in the nursery and for the babysitting while I teach? We've got that situation going on right now. It's a little more complicated. Let me explain with how you account for that when you give them their tax information this time of year. Let me explain with a story. There was a woman, her name's Teresa. She was teaching at a homeschool group here in town. She was teaching a group of 7th and 8th graders geography. She taught them once or twice a week. And I was preparing Teresa's tax return. So I was quite familiar with this organization. As a matter of fact, this organization, I talked about how they pay their independent contractors. And Teresa was a specific case because she was paid for teaching the class. She was paid about $1,000 that year for teaching the class. And then her son, her high school son, also took a class there. The value of the class was worth $200. And what the IRS says is that if she's an independent contractor, she can't receive fringe benefits tax-free. So you have to add on the value of that class, that $200, to the $1,000 that she earned. So at the end of the year, her tax information, it's called a 1099 miscellaneous, it was for $1,200. That's the value of what she was paid for teaching the class and the value of that, quote, free class that she was given. It has to be included in their tax information because it is not a tax-free benefit to an independent contractor. Well, I hope that's clear. Send up a white flag if that is confusing to you, and I'll either discuss it again. That's just something to be aware of. In my homeschool co-op right now, remember how I told you that we didn't pay our people anymore, that the parents paid them directly? So we have a woman who is an art teacher, and she said, can I bring my two preschoolers along? I don't have anybody to babysit them, but we really wanted her to teach. So we said, sure. So our co-op is doing it just as a blessing to her, but because the parents are paying her directly, it's kind of completely out of our hands in terms of the tax reporting. She's responsible for reporting all of her income that she earned from all these different parents. All right, I want to tell you also on this last issue of these two types of workers, because it is very confusing, employee versus independent contractor. The IRS used to use 20 factors. There was a 20-factor test they used to use, and now they've condensed it down to 3. And that might sound like it's better, but I think it's a little more gray and a little more confusing. I have printed up the 20-factor test in my book, Paying Workers in a Homeschool Group. And the 20-factor test, again, isn't quite a litmus test, plus or minus, but it is a nice list because it's just a bunch of questions. And if you answer yes, it looks more like an employee. If you answer no, the worker looks more like an independent contractor. There's no hard and fast rule about, you know, like if I click 6 of these, they're definitely an employee or definitely not. But it gives you some questions, 20 questions, to go down and look at the preponderance of evidence and kind of see which way your employees, your workers might land, okay? If you cannot decide or cannot determine, even after reading my book and looking at the 20-factor test, you can certainly read anything the IRS has, which might be a little more confusing. But you can also let the IRS decide how to classify your workers. There is a form called an SS-8. You can get it at the IRS website, irs.gov. Type in SS-8. SS-8 in their search box, and that form will come up. That form, to be perfectly honest with you, is not usually used by the organization or the employer. It's usually used by a worker who's thought they were being hired as an employee, and at tax time they found out that they're hired as an independent contractor and they're responsible for paying their own Social Security and Medicare taxes, and they don't like that. So the SS-8 is usually a form used by an unhappy worker who thinks they've been cheated. And what they're allowed to do is make their case to the IRS. They write out, this is what I did on the job, this is why I think this employer cheated me and treated me badly. Okay. But if you honestly don't know how your workers should be treated, you can apply to the IRS and ask them to decide. It will take probably 6 months, maybe longer, for them to get back to you. Sorry, the IRS just moves slowly on these things. And then their decision is binding. So if you think, man, I think we have independent contractors here, but I'm not really sure, let's let the IRS decide. You have to abide by their decision. And if the IRS decides that they look more like employees, then you're going to start having to deal with all the employee issues and the employee withholding and things like that. Okay, we've got a question. Can an organization pay someone as an independent contractor for a one-time job, such as data entry for registrants for an event? That's an excellent question. And yes, you certainly can hire someone as an independent contractor for a one-time job, especially the job you described, data entry for an event. If you say, I need to hire you for this one-time job, and they know how to do the job, you don't have to train them very much. You know, you shouldn't have to train them how to do data entry. If they've done it before and they know what they're doing, you can just set them free and you quote them by the job. When the job is done, you're done. That's a perfect description of an independent contractor. Think about it like I hired someone to do my web design. She was not my employee. I didn't tell her how to do web design because I don't know how to do web design. I told her what I wanted. She quoted me back a quote. It'd be a real good idea if your independent contractor would do that. say, here's the quote for what I'm going to do, and actually send you a bill. Here, I did this job. I designed your website, or I did the data entry. Here's my bill. And you pay her the bill. You pay her like that. That the IRS, if they're ever auditing, they look for that kind of evidence to support the role of independent classification of as independent contractor. So that's a really good question. But, yeah, I think that the one-time job usually typically fits the definition of independent contractor. An employee usually has an ongoing relationship with the organization.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.